Shop the Sherwin-Williams sale and get 30% off Duration, Woodscapes, and SuperDeck products May 1st through the 11th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
When residents of a small town decide to take the law into their own hands and publicly execute the town bully, one would assume consequences would ensue. Not so for the small community of Skidmore, Missouri. This is a town where a murder took place that no one saw or heard, yet more than half the town watched it take place. A dark act that would start a slippery slope that would lead to the demise of the town.
Sometimes the human mind goes to dark places. Sometimes those dark delusions turn into a reality. A reality so shaded and gray, once all is said and done, the healthy mind is drawn into the documented retelling of these tragic events, trying to find logic, reason, and understanding where there may be none at all. This is the Dark Side of Wikipedia.
Skidmore is a city in Nottoway County, Missouri. The population was 284 as of the 2010 census. The small farming community had a yearly pumpkin show until 2004. The Skidmore area was first settled in 1840 by William Bunting. Shortly after the plate purchase opened the area to settlement, Skidmore itself was plated in 1880 when M. Skidmore donated 20 acres to the Nottoway Valley Railroad Company, the agent for the Kansas City, St. Joseph, and Council Bluffs Railroad, which was eventually taken over by the Burlington Northern Railroad. The railroad no longer operates. The St. Oswald's Protestant Episcopal Church was listed on the National Register of Historic Places in 1992. On July 10th, 1981, Ken McElroy was shot to death with at least two different guns while sitting in his truck in front of the pool hall in town. Though dozens of people saw the event, all denied seeing anything that would help identify the shooters. McElroy had a reputation as a town bully, and he had fended off over 20 charges for acts of theft, rape, and other violence, often by means of witness intimidation. In the months before his death, he was appealing a light sentence for shooting a 70-year-old grocer in the neck. Town residents had been upset over the inability of the courts to deal with him. Author Harry N. McLean recounted the incident and its background in a best-selling and award-winning book, In Broad Daylight. In 1991, the incident was portrayed in the made-for-TV movie starring Brian Dennehy and Cloris Leachman. The Ken McElroy shooting was also the focus of the A&E Network program City Confidential Season 2, Episode 22, titled Skidmore, Frontier Justice. On December 16, 2004, Skidmore was once again the focus of national attention when Bobby Jo Stinnett, a relative of Branson Perry, was murdered and had her unborn baby cut from her womb. The baby, Victoria Jo Stinnett, was found alive 2 days later in Topeka, Kansas. The killer, Lisa Montgomery, received a federal death sentence and was executed early in the morning on January 13, 2021, at a federal prison in Terre Haute, Indiana. So this is, of course, the Dark Side of Wikipedia. Welcome, everybody. If you like our program, you want to get advanced episodes of the show in their entirety, commercial-free, and our final chapter segments, go to patreon.com/darksideofwikipedia. $5 a month gets you all that and helps keep our program on the air. So please do that and press subscribe wherever you are listening to this right now so you don't miss any of our episodes. It's Tony and Sean with you today. Have you heard of Skidmore before?
I haven't, but man, after listening to this information, come on, kids, let's hop in the caravan and head on down to this magical place.
Exactly. I just finished watching like a 5-part documentary on it. I think it's on Sundance right now. It's all about Skidmore and about really the thing that put it on the map, if you will, was the Ken Rex McElroy killing, which was the inspiration for In Broad Daylight. I mean, essentially, this guy really did terrorize the town. Now I'm not saying that vigilante justice is the right thing to do in all cases, but this guy was doing horrible shit around this town, and the court system, as shitty as it is, was really shitty for these people. This guy just kept getting off left and right, and he kept coming back to town, and he kept doing whatever he wanted. There's a lot of me that's like, yeah, I don't blame them for what they did. But at the same point, it's like, it really kind of sets the bar, I guess, that much lower for a town. I mean, once you do something like that, you execute the person just, you know, by vigilante justice, and half the town is in on it. You really kind of went over a line that's going to be hard to come back from. You know, you may think, oh, it's going to be great and wonderful now, but you just did something that now you did that. Well, maybe one of you could do this too if somebody's acting up, and shit can go downhill really quick.
Well, once you, like you say, you break that line, and there's really no turning back.
Yeah.
Because if you looked to those that are supposed to help and protect and do good and put away the bad guys, and that is not happening, you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah. I mean, the guy fucking shot a 70-year-old grocer in the neck, and he's still running around town. They let him out. And they're waiting for his... This is like how horrible this human being was. So it's like, okay, he's not a good guy. Right, wrong, I don't know. I mean, I think sometimes if you're in that situation and you got kids in that town and this guy is harassing them and doing, you know, there's just so much. It's like, got to do what you got to do at some point. And
later in life, I didn't know that almost like you're living in a real life low budget TBS Halloween film.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that's the interesting part of life as we get older. It's like, wow, life really is a low budget TBS Halloween film.
How the fuck do I change the channel of my life?
Exactly.
I want to go to TLC.
Exactly. There's just so much of it. But then you go to TLC and it's like suddenly my 600-pound life, and it's like, God damn it, I got to eat more salads.
Yeah. Wait. Let me go to the Home and Garden Channel Network.
Yeah. No more shiplap, please. Continuing into the story, we'll do this is really divided into the stories of Ken, Rex, McElroy, and some of the other individuals who have made impact on the town. This is now into the Rex McElroy area. He was a resident of Skidmore, Missouri, known as the town bully. McElroy's unsolved killing became the focus of international attention. Over the course of his life, McElroy was accused of dozens of felonies, including assault, child molestation, statutory rape, arson, animal cruelty, hog and cattle rustling, and burglary. In all, he was indicted 21 times but escaped conviction each time except for the last. In 1981, McElroy was convicted of shooting and seriously injuring the town's 70-year-old grocer, Ernest Bo Bowenkamp. McElroy successfully appealed the conviction and was released on bond, after which he engaged in an ongoing harassment campaign against Bowenkamp and others who were sympathetic to Bowenkamp, including the town's Church of Christ minister. He appeared in a local bar, the DNG Tavern, armed with an M1 Grand rifle and bayonet, and later threatened to kill Bowenkamp. The next day, McElroy was shot to death in broad daylight as he sat with his wife, Trina, in his pickup truck on Skidmore's Main Street. He was struck by bullets from at least two different firearms in front of a crowd of people estimated between 30 and 46. To date, no one has been charged in connection with McElroy's death. McElroy was born in 1934, the 15th of 16 children, born to a poor migrant tenant farming couple named Tony and Mabel. McElroy, who had moved between Kansas and the Ozarks before settling outside of Skidmore, dropped out of school at the age of 15 in the eighth grade and quickly established a local reputation as a cattle rustler, small-time thief, and womanizer. For more than two decades, McElroy was suspected of being involved in theft of grain, gasoline, alcohol, antiques, and livestock, but he avoided conviction when charges were brought against him 21 times. Often after witnesses refused to testify because he allegedly intimidated them, frequently by following his targets or parking outside their homes and watching them. He was represented by defense attorney Richard Gene McFadden of Gatlin, Missouri. McElroy fathered more than 10 children with different women. He met his last wife, Trina McLeod, when she was 12 years old and in eighth grade. He statutorily raped McLeod repeatedly, also burning her house down and shooting the family dog before her parents rented and agreed to their marriage, or relented and agreed to their marriage. She became pregnant when she was 14, dropped out of school in the ninth grade and went to live with McElroy and his second wife, Alice. McElroy divorced Alice and married Trina in order to escape charges of statutory rape, to which she was the only witness. 16 days after Trina gave birth, both she and Alice fled to Trina's mother and stepfather's house. According to court records, McElroy tracked them down and brought them back. He then returned to Trina's parents' home when they were away and once again shot the family dog and burned the house down. Events prior to his killing, based on Trina's story, McElroy was indicted in June 1973 for arson, assault, and statutory rape. He was arrested, booked, arraigned, and released on $2,500 bail. Trina and her baby were placed in foster care at a home in Maryville, Missouri. McElroy sat outside the foster home for hours at a time, staring at it. He told the foster family that he would trade girl for girl to get his child back, since he knew where the foster family's biological daughter went to school and what bus route she rode. Additional charges were filed against McElroy. On July 27, 1976, Skidmore farmer Romaine Henry said McElroy shot him twice with a shotgun after Henry challenged him for shooting weapons on Henry's property. McElroy was charged with assault with intent to kill. McElroy denied he was at the scene. As the case dragged on without a court date, Henry and McElroy had parked outside his home at least 100 times. At the trial, two raccoon hunters testified they were with McElroy the day of the shooting, away from Henry's property. Henry was forced to admit in court, under questioning by McElroy's attorney, Richard Gene McFadden, that he had concealed his own petty criminal conviction for more than 30 previous years. McElroy was acquitted. In 1980, one of McElroy's children got into an argument with a clerk, Evelyn Summey, at a local grocery store owned by 70-year-old Ernest Bo Bowmankamp and his wife, Lois, allegedly because a young McElroy child tried to steal some candy. McElroy began stalking the Bowmankamp family and eventually threatened Bo Bowmankamp in the back of his store with a shotgun in hand. In the ensuing confrontation, McElroy shot Bowmankamp in the neck. Bowmankamp survived and McElroy was arrested and charged with attempted murder. McElroy was convicted at trial of assault, but freed on bail pending his appeal. Immediately after being released at a post-trial hearing, McElroy went to the D&G Tavern, a local bar, with an M1 Grand rifle with a bayonet attached and made graphic threats about what he would do to Bo Bowmankamp. This led to several patrons deciding to see what they could legally do to prevent McElroy from harming anyone else. Nottoway County Sheriff Dan Estes suggested they form a neighborhood watch. McElroy's appeal hearing was again delayed. On the morning of July 10, 1981, townspeople met at the Legion Hall in the center of town with Sheriff Estes to discuss how to protect themselves. During the meeting, McElroy arrived to the D&G Tavern with Trina. As he sat drinking at the bar, word got back to the men at the Legion Hall that he was in town. Sheriff Estes instructed the assembled group not to get into a direct confrontation with McElroy, but instead seriously consider forming a neighborhood watch program. Estes then drove out of town in his police cruiser. The citizens decided to go to the tavern en masse. The bar soon filled completely. After McElroy finished his drinks, he purchased a six-pack of beer, left the bar, and entered his pickup truck. Someone shot at McElroy while he was sitting in his truck. He was shot at least several times and hit twice, once by a center fire rifle and once by a .22 rimfire rifle. In all, there were 46 potential witnesses to the shooting, including Trina McElroy, who was in the truck with her husband when he was shot. No one called for an ambulance. Only Trina claimed to identify a gunman. Every other witness was either unable to name an assailant or claimed not to have seen who fired the fatal shots. The DA declined to press charges. An extensive federal investigation did not lead to any charges. One local resident later told investigators, when asked what happened, replied, "He needed a killing." McElroy was buried at Memorial Park Cemetery in St. Joseph, Missouri, on July 9, 1984. Trina McElroy filed a $5 million wrongful death lawsuit against the town of Skidmore County in Nottoway. Sheriff Danny Estes, Steve Peters, mayor of Skidmore, and Del Clement, whom Trina accused of being the shooter, but who was never charged. The case was later settled out of court by all parties for a sum of $17,600, with no one admitting guilt, for the stated reason of avoiding costly legal fees should the suit proceed. Trina remarried and moved to Lebanon, Missouri, where she died of cancer on her 55th birthday on January 24th of 2012. So, by all accounts, I think the citizens did the right thing.
I'm not disagreeing with anything, and particularly, here's the thing. killing a human, not good. But when you kill dogs, gloves are off.
Yeah.
You can do no good to bring back my good faith in you.
Well, he's charged with, like, rape and child molestation and fuck. I mean, he gets with a 12-year-old? Yeah, I'm fine with him dying. There's no love lost there. I think, you know, if the law is not going to do anything about this motherfucker, then I'm glad somebody else did. Unfortunately, it kind of led to a lot of chaos and the town falling apart, but I don't know. I mean, the world is a better place without that man walking on it.
In looking at the population of this place, there's less than 300 people.
Yeah.
My curiosity is, why do the 300 of you live there?
Well, yeah.
Get the hell out.
I think it's just really, there's no options for a lot of people. You know, it's a very depressed community. There's not jobs. It's probably, you know, that's all they got. And I think a lot of them are fairly old now. There's not a lot of young people that go to that town and stay. So eventually, give it 20 years, it's going to probably have no one in it. It will become a ghost town. But my God. I think after that, I'd probably leave. Whether or not I like the town, I'd be like, okay, this is just enough. Like, I'm glad he's gone, but, you know, I think a lot of people did just that. They're like, okay, it's time to call it a day.
In your recount, just to confirm, keeping track of the number of people that got shot in the neck, are we at two, or was the 70-year-old prior the same person?
He was the same person.
Okay, yeah. Very well.
But he did shoot at other people. It wasn't his first time shooting at people. So, yeah, but that was the pending conviction that was coming up. There's more fun in Skidmore. We're going to talk about Bobby Joe Stinnett next. Here we go. Bobby Joe Stinnett was a pregnant 23-year-old American woman found murdered in her home in Skidmore, Missouri. The perpetrator, Lisa Marie Montgomery, then aged 36, strangled Stinnett and cut her unborn fetus 8 months into gestation from her womb. The baby was safely recovered by authorities and returned to the father. Montgomery was tried and found guilty in 2007. She was executed by lethal injection shortly after midnight on January 13, 2021, having exhausted the appeals process. She thus became the first female federal inmate in 67 years to be executed in the United States federal government. And the fourth overall, Stinnett graduated from Nottoway Holt High School in Graham, Missouri in 2000. Bobby Joe Stinnett and her husband ran a dog breeding business from their residence. Stinnett and Montgomery met through dog show events and had ongoing interactions in an online rat terrier chat room called Ratter Chatter. Montgomery told Stinnett that she too was pregnant, leading to the two women chatting online and exchanging emails about their pregnancies. On December 16, 2004, Montgomery entered Stinnett's house and caused her death by strangulation. Montgomery then cut Stinnett's unborn child from her womb and fled the scene. There was no sign of forced entry. Authorities believe that Montgomery, posing as a customer, Darlene Fisher, had arranged to visit Stinnett's house on that day. It is known that Stinnett was expecting the arrival in Skidmore of prospective buyers for a terrier about the time of her murder. Stinnett was discovered by her mother, Becky Harper, lying in a pool of blood approximately an hour after the murder. Harper immediately called authorities and described the wounds inflicted upon her daughter as appearing as if her stomach had exploded. Paramedics were unsuccessful in attempts to revive Stinnett. She was pronounced dead at St. Francis Hospital in Maryville. Montgomery allegedly called her husband Kevin the same day around 5:15 p.m., saying that on a shopping trip to Topeka, she had gone into labor and given birth. The following day, December 17th, police arrested Montgomery at her farmhouse in Melvern, Kansas. A witness would later report that on the morning before her arrest, Montgomery took the infant, her husband, and two teenage sons to a restaurant for breakfast. Police had initially gone to Montgomery's home after tracing online communications to her IP address, hoping to interview her as a witness. When they arrived, they found a car matching the description of the one at the crime scene, and when they entered the home, they found Montgomery inside holding the infant and watching television. Montgomery was arrested an hour later after her story fell apart and she confessed. The kidnapped newborn, who she claimed as her own, was recovered and soon placed in the custody of the father. The quick recovery and capture attributed to the use of forensic computer investigations with tracked Montgomery and Stinnett's online communication. The investigation was aided by the insurance of an Amber Alert to enlist the public's help. The alert was initially denied as it had not been used before in an unborn child's case, and thus there were no descriptions of the victim. Eventually, after intervention by Congressman Sam Graves, the alert was implemented. DNA testing was used to confirm the infant's identity. Lisa Marie Montgomery resided in Malvern, Kansas at the time of the murder. Montgomery's mother's alcohol addiction led to Lisa being born with permanent brain damage. She was raised in a physically, emotionally, and sexually abusive home where she was allegedly raped by her stepfather and his friends and beaten from the age of 11. She sought mental escape through drinking alcohol. When Montgomery was 14, her mother discovered the abuse and reacted by threatening her daughter with a gun. This was followed by her mother forcing prostitution upon her daughter, early teen years, which caused her to begin her disassociation from what was happening. Montgomery tried to escape by marrying at the age of 18, but both her forced first marriage to her stepbrother and a second marriage resulted in further abuse. Montgomery had four children before she underwent an involuntary tubal litigation in 1990. She falsely claimed to be pregnant several times after the procedure, according to both her first and second spouses. At the time of her arrest, it was speculated that Montgomery's motivation stemmed from a miscarriage she may have suffered and subsequently concealed from her family. Further possibilities surrounding her motive were raised following speculation that her former husband planned to reveal she had lied about being pregnant in an effort to get custody of her children. It was surmised that Montgomery, alongside her long history of trauma and severe mental illness, needed to procure a baby in order to counter this charge of habitual lying about pregnancy. Montgomery was charged with a federal offense of kidnapping, resulting in death, a crime established by the Federal Kidnapping Act of 1932 and described in Title 18 of the United States Code. If convicted, she faced a sentence of life imprisonment or the death penalty. At a pretrial hearing, a neuropsychologist testified that head injuries, which Montgomery had sustained some years before, could have damaged the part of the brain that controls aggression. During her trial in federal court, her defense attorneys, led by Frederick Dechart, asserted that she had pseudopsychosis, a mental condition that causes a woman to falsely believe she is pregnant and exhibit outward signs of pregnancy. According to The Guardian, Dechart attempted to follow this line of defense only 1 week before the trial began after being forced to abandon a contradictory argument that Stinnett was murdered by Montgomery's brother, Tommy, who had an alibi. As a result, Montgomery's family refused to cooperate with Dechart and described her background to the jury. Dr. V.S. Ratchmandran and M.D. William Logan gave expert testimony that Montgomery had pseudopsychosis in addition to depression, borderline personality disorder, need a bell for that, and post-traumatic stress disorder. Ratchmandran testified that Montgomery's stories about her actions fluctuated because of her delusional state, that she was unable to dictate the nature and quality of her acts. Both federal prosecutor Roseman Ketchmark and the opposing expert witness forensic psychiatrist Park Dietz disagreed strongly with the diagnosis of pseudopsychosis. On October 22, 2007, jurors found Montgomery guilty, rejecting the defense claim Montgomery was delusional. On October 26, the jury recommended the death sentence. Judge Gary A. Fenner formally sentenced Montgomery to death. On April 4, 2008, a judge upheld the jury's recommendation for death. Dechart's pseudopsychosis defense, Montgomery's past trauma, and separate diagnosis of mental illness were not fully revealed until after her conviction. This led critics, including Guardian journalist David Rose, to argue that Dechart provided an incomplete legal defense for Montgomery. Varner required Dechart to be cross-examined in November of 2016. Dechart rejected all criticism and defended his conduct. On March 19th of 2012, the U.S. Supreme Court denied Montgomery's petition. Montgomery, who was registered for the Federal Bureau of Prisons under number 11072031, was incarcerated at Federal Medical Center Carswell in Fort Worth, Texas, where she remained until she was transferred to the site for her execution. For a long time, she was the only woman with a federal death sentence at Federal Medical Center. Experts who examined Montgomery after conviction concluded that by the time of her crime, she had long been living with psychosis, bipolar disorder, and post-traumatic stress disorders. She was said to be often disassociated from reality and to have permanent brain damage from numerous beatings at the hands of her parents and spouses. The case of Atkins versus Virginia ruled that executing individuals with intellectual disability violates the Eighth Amendment of the United States Constitution regarding cruel and unusual punishments. Given this ruling, it could be expected that Montgomery was ineligible for a death sentence. Very strong and undisputed evidence can lead to a withdrawal of a death sentence or further inquiry into it. Montgomery was scheduled for execution on December 8, 2020 by lethal injection at the U.S. Penitentiary in Terre Haute, Indiana, but this was delayed following her attorneys contracting COVID-19. On December 23, 2020, Montgomery was given a new execution date of January 12, 2021. U.S. District Court Judge Randolph Moss found that the director's order setting a new execution date while the court's stay was in effect not in accordance with law prohibiting the rescheduling of the execution before January 1st, 2021. On January 1st, a three-judge panel on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit vacated Moss' ruling, effectively reinstating her execution date of January 12th. On that date, federal judge Patrick Hanlon granted a stay of her execution on the grounds that her mental competence must first be tested, as it could be argued she did not understand the grounds for her execution per the Eighth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. The stay was then vacated by the Supreme Court via a 6-3 vote. The execution was ordered to be carried out immediately. She arrived in Terre Haute's death row on January 12th. Montgomery was executed by lethal injection on January 13, 2021 at the United States Penitentiary in Terre Haute, Indiana. When asked if she had any last words, she replied, no. She was pronounced dead at 1:31 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. She became the first female federal prisoner executed in 67 years, the first woman executed in the United States since Kelly Gissendaner in 2015, and the first person executed in the United States in 2021. Only three other women have been executed by the U.S. federal government. In 1865, Mary Stuart by hanging. In 1953, Ethel Rosenberg by electric chair. And also in 1953, Bonnie Heady by gas chamber. Montgomery's execution was followed a day later by Corey Johnson and 3 days later by Dustin Higgs. They were the last three executions under the presidency of Donald Trump, occurring in a lame duck period. All three were carried out by the United States federal government, each being controversial for a variety of different reasons. Jessica Lessenthorpe of the BBC stated that most Skidmore residents supported Montgomery's execution. Yeah, you know, I got to, you know, there's a lot of things here to unpack. You have to understand this person was seriously not well, obviously. But on the same point, if that were my daughter that she cut the baby out of and killed, I don't know that she would have even made it to the electric chair or the lethal injection or whatever. I probably would have taken her out myself.
If you're a new fan to the program, Tony, he considers himself his own sheriff of his old town. If you fuck with my family or my friends, screw the justice system.
Yeah,
that we talk kinda about is everybody gets their proven guilty, basically innocent until proven guilty.
If I know the person killed a family member and I know it,
but
look the fuck
if
out.
I am related to the person or I know the person that had the baby cut from their stomach, oh, watch out there,
yeah,
old peewee Johnny boy fuckstick, whatever your name is, you're done. And I'm not just going to be nice enough and come up and, you know, kill you with one shot. I'm going to torture you.
Probably.
I'm going to have a sick and twisted enjoyment to give me closure, which here's the thing. People that tune into this and are, you know, curious of these stories, I'd like to think that you're not alone. I'd like to think that many people, if something was done to one of their loved ones, first of all, if you could, I'd like to think we're on the same page. If you could choose whether somebody we love this happens to or to us, Mm-hmm. Without question, me, us, like I want it done. I'd pick nothing, but yeah. rather than have to. But what's crazy is this story, something eerily similar has occurred 4 years ago in Fargo, North Dakota.
Oh, God.
Where the cliff notes of it is there was a beautiful young woman just got pregnant with her boyfriend, doing great things in life. Her upstairs neighbors in the apartment complex she lived in, apparently the girlfriend told the boyfriend she was pregnant. Oh, the boyfriend God. Then ultimately went to say, well, where's, I mean, like, how are you pregnant? You're yeah. not showing any signs. She lied, clearly. He then said, produce a baby or I'm leaving you. So the two of them came up with the great idea. Hey, let's kill our downstairs pregnant neighbor and cut the baby in the bathtub out of her.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it is. And this happened in Fargo, North Dakota, a place that I called home for yeah. 5 years. And when this happened, I mean, you want to talk about a community that collectively felt nauseous and absolutely yeah. just. And this is a place, unlike this town in Missouri, stuff like this doesn't happen there. Yeah. And it's kind of crazy how similar
yeah.
It was. It is.
You look at this and you go, at some point, yes, I mean, I truly do understand mental illness and I do have sympathy. That is something that I don't have it myself, but I've dealt with personally in my life with those around me. But I get it. But at the same point, someone who does something like this, I mean, it's one thing to deal with it and work with it and try and be productive and lead the best life you possibly can. Great. You know, everyone deserves should be doing that because it's such a rampant thing and we need more and more attention and help for that. But once you cross the line of doing something like this, I don't understand really. What's your purpose in this world anymore? You fucking killed someone and cut the baby out of them. What are we keeping you around for? So you can watch Maury on the group television at the home that you're in? Or, I mean, what's the point here? You did a horrible, horrible, horrible act. I what? So now what? I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm heartless there, but something like that, that's pretty fucking horrible. And at some point it's got to be dealt with. And you know, I'm not, again, I know sometimes I come across on the show as like Uber death penalty, but I'm not. I think it needs to be very cut and dry. No question about it whatsoever if somebody does get that. And I think there's many cases where it has been very questionable and wrong people have been killed. But something where it's so fucking cut and dry and they did such a heinous act and caused so much trauma for an innocent individual. Sorry, I just don't have a lot of sympathy at that point.
The only negative of how this all transpires is if somebody who does get ultimately put to death who truly didn't do
that's different.
The act.
Yeah.
That is in its own topic of discussion in and by itself, but yeah, it's we talk all too often about people that are in the justice system, prosecutors, attorneys, law enforcement. That is a difficult job for many reasons, but yeah. maybe one reason you don't think about is the mental control that you have to have.
God.
That you just want to put this person to death. You just want to throw the book at them, but you have to go through all the freaking paperwork and my God. And then ultimately you have all this evidence and they get some lesser sentence or this. And yeah. it's just,
I don't know. Yeah. It takes a special individual to be able to do that. There's no way in fucking hell my brain would work that way. There's more to the town of Skidmore, Missouri. Branson, Kanye Perry. Is our next chapter, and that'll be the final chapter of the show. If you want to hear what happened with Branson, become a member of our program. What the hell do we call them on this program? I'm always forgetting it.
Darksider.
Darksider. Yeah, that's the name of the show. I have mental lapses every now and then. A Darksider. Sign up. We got three shows, so there you go.
Hey, sign up to be one of those people. Yeah.
I do all the shows. I'm a full-time dad. I'm running a farm. I have no moment that I'm not doing something unless I'm sleeping. So I'm sorry I forget a name or something. Anyway, and by the way, when you become a Darksider, you support everything I just told you I do, because that's my life. Sign up over at patreon.com/darksideofwikipedia. Become a Darksider. Get access to the final chapter of this and all of our episodes, all commercial free, as well as advanced episodes of the show. Again, patreon.com/darksideofwikipedia. Sean and myself, we'll see you over there.